Sefer Neim through Parsha Frameshir for Parsha's Kisisa. We're looking at the Sefer Maaseh Rokeach by Rav Masud Chai Rokeach, who lived from 1690 to 1768. So the Pasuk in Parsha's Kisisa in Perek Lamed, Pasuk of Hey, says V'asiso so shemen mishchas kodesh rokach mirkachas maaseh rokeach, that when referring to the ketores, should make oil of sacred anointment, a blend of mixture, maaseh rokeach, the work of a spice blender. And Rashi explains that the phrase maaseh rokeach means that rokeach is the term used for the artisan of a particular craft. And obviously, very apropos, if your last name is Rokeach, to have the Sefer name Maaseh Rokeach. So, who was Rav Masud Chai Rokeach? See, he was born in Izmir, in Turkey. He studied Torah by the rabbis of Izmir, Rav Chaim Abulafia, author of the Mikroi Kodesh, Rav Yitzchak Cohen Rappaport, author of the Bate Kahuna. He moved to Eretz Yisrael, and in 1749, he went actually as an emissary to North Africa. At his completion of the mission, he settled in Tripoli, in Libya. He was made a Rav there. We established a yeshiva and brought Torah and mitzvot to that community. Later on in life, he settled in Livorno in Italy. He passed away in Tripoli on the day after Tisha B'Av in 1768. He did write numerous Sfarim. The most famous is the Sefer Maaseh Rokeach, which is a three-volume Sefer on his Chidushim on the Rambam. He also wrote a Sefer Divrei HaBraisa, which is a commentary on the Chamish Megillos and the Chidushi Hashem on the Gemara, but many of his comments and his Chidushim are still in manuscript form. They never were actually printed. So really the main Sefer that people learn of his is the Maaseh Rokeach al HaRamba. In the introduction, he answers the question that he asks on himself, which is that if you'll notice through the works of the Maaseh Rokeach, he doesn't even print the commentary of the Ravid. Now the Ravid famously argues on the Rambam all over the place, and yet when the Maaseh Rokeach quotes the Rambams, he doesn't also quote the Ravid. So he explains that his intention with the Sefer is not to concern himself with the kashas and answers and defenses on the Ravid, because the Magen Mishnah and the Kesef Mishnah already came before him and did that, and he felt it wouldn't be right to mention the insight without the defense, and so he just left it out and focused on his own Chidushim. So we'll quote four limudim, interesting limudim, from the Sefer Maaseh Rokeach al Haramba. The first one is that the Gemara in Brachos tells us that if one sees a beautiful creature, he should recite the bracha of Baruch Shekachalo Ba'olamo. And the Shulchan Aruch, in Simin Reish Chav Hei, Sif Yud, paskins that this bracha can be recited upon seeing beautiful animals. How come we don't make this bracha? So the Mishnah Berurah quotes from the Chayyadam that the minog nowadays is not to recite this bracha, but you recite it without Shemu Malchus. You could say Baruch Shekachalo Ba'olamo, you don't say it by Hashem's name. And the Chayyadam explains the why, what was the change. He says that nowadays we're accustomed to seeing beautiful animals regularly, so we don't get amazed upon seeing them. And the Shaar Tzion explains a little bit differently that we don't recite this bracha nowadays because the qualification for being a quote-unquote beautiful creature is a very high standard. So the Rambam, Hilchos Brachos, in Perek Yod, Halacha Yod Gimel, quotes the Gemara that this bracha is recited upon Brios Noos, which is a direct quote of the Gemara, but then the Rambam himself adds on Umisukanos beyoser, and they're very refined. So it seems that the Rambam felt that the creature must be exceptionally beautiful, and perhaps we rarely, if ever, see such creatures. So the Maaseh Rokeach, commenting on this Rambam, says that perhaps the Rambam felt that the creature must be beautiful, specifically in the eyes of the Torah. What does that mean? Well, the Torah describes Rachel, for example, as being yifas toar v'yifas mareh. And Rashi explains she had a beautiful face and she was shining. So the Torah standard for beauty is very high. And therefore, if that standard of beauty is translated to the level of beauty necessitating the bracha of Shekachal Obolomo, the Maaseh Rokeach wants to say that's perhaps why the Rambam added in Umizukaz B'yozer to tell us it's a level of beauty that we practically don't really experience seeing, which is why that bracha is not really made nowadays. That's one comment of the Maaseh Rokeach. Number two, going into Hilchos Purim. So there's an interesting kasha that many of the Achronim ask, which is that there's two halachos in the Gemara when it comes to Purim that are both undisputed. Number one, the Gemara says that when one reads the word Vaisasa, one of the sons of Haman, that Vav should be elongated. Machlokes, whether it means the Vav should be larger than the Megillah, one should say it for longer, but that's the halacha. And the second halacha is that the Aseres B'nei Haman should be said by the Baal Koreh, the one who's reading the Megillah, in one breath. So both those statements are undisputed. However, the Rambam only quotes the halacha of reciting the Aseres B'nei Haman in one breath, but does not quote the halacha of extending the vav of Vaisasa. So why not? So the Maaser Rokeach suggests, he knows that the Gemara says that their neshamos of the Aseres B'nei Haman all left at the same time. And the Rambam also says that they were hung and killed at the same time. So where did the Rambam get that from? Do we have a makor for that? That all the Aseres B'nei Haman were mamish hung and killed at the same time, their neshamos left at the same moment? So the Maaser Rokeach answers by saying that's why the Rambam doesn't quote the halacha about elongating the vav of Vaisasa. Because the reason the Rambam didn't quote the halacha is because he felt it was already covered in the halacha regarding saying the Aseres B'nei Haman in one breath. Why? Why would we have the halacha of elongating the vav? He says the pshat is to show everyone, to show us, that all the sons were hung together. So when one reads the Aseres B'nei Haman in one breath, that's also to teach us they were hung and killed and their neshamos left together all at once. Thus, the Rambam felt these halachos, while they're both accomplishing the same goal, and while they might be in different contexts, are in a way redundant, and therefore he rephrased the halacha so that this halacha could include the other halacha not mentioned, but it's part of the same theme. So you say the Aseres B'nei Haman in one breath, but that's symbolizing that they were hung and killed at the same time, and that incorporates the elongating the vav vaisasa halacha without actually having to quote that halacha. That's the second comment of the Maaser Rokeach. Number three, this has been a shaila throughout history, which is attributing nigunim, tunes, from non-Jewish sources and using them for Torahdic songs. A very famous example, the classic tune to Misha Nichnas Adar Marba Mesimcha, stems from a non-Jewish slave song from the 1800s, Pick a Bale of Cotton. So, is there any problem with singing holy words, words that are kadosh, to a non-Jewish tune? So the Birkei Yosef in Or Chaim, in Simen Tav Kuf Samech Sif Vav, he quotes the Maaser Rokeach al HaRambam, Hilchos Tefila, who was asked this very shaila, whether a chazan in shul could, for nigunim, sing songs in davening to non-Jewish tunes. So the Maaser Rokeach answers based on a quote from the Sefer Chasidim, which says that a chazan should not sing tunes of non-Jews. So the Maaser Rokeach is medayik. He infers that not only is singing songs of non-Jews problematic, but even the tunes would be problematic, and he assumes that the reason for this is because the tune stems from an unholy place, a place of tumah, and would taint and would mar the holy lyrics, the kadosh lyrics of davening. However, the Birkei Yosef notes that the same author who quotes the Sefer Chasidim writes that he used to sing songs in Arab, to Arab tunes. And even though some object, the Birkei Yosef says, there's no reason to object, nothing wrong. So it's a machlokes. So while the Maaser Rokeach seems to be machmir to not put davening to non-Jewish tunes, the Birkei Yosef seems to end off being lenient in that regard. And finally, the last halacha we'll quote, the fourth halacha, which is that we know in order to have a zimun, the three people have to join together. They have to be part of the same meal. So we know the halacha is that at least one person has to be able to eat from the food of the others. So the shaila is, do you have to be able to eat from their food now, or food that could be brought to them later on? So the Maaser Rokeach notes that many bring down the halacha that if a kohen is eating challah not meaning the challah we have on Shabbos, challah meaning hafrashas challah that only a kohen could eat, and a non-kohen is eating pas akum, bread baked by a non-Jew, and a kohen is makbid not to eat pas akum, so they can't join together because neither of them can eat the food of the other. So the Maaser Rokeach says, I don't understand. The Gemara in Brachos Daf Mem Zayin says that Rav and Shmuel were eating. Rav Simi Bar Chiya came and he ate quickly, right at the end. So Rav asked, do you want to join us for a Zimun? So we already finished eating. Yeah, but Shmuel said that if they would bring a dessert for him, wouldn't he eat it? And therefore, it's as if we're still eating, so Rav Simi can join the Zimun. So the Maaser Rokeach says, Well, if that's the case, then why can't the Kohen and the non-Kohen in the previously discussed circumstance join for a Zimum? Yes, it's true that the Kohen can't eat the Pas Akum of the non-Kohen right now, because that's all he has. But if someone were to bring the non-Kohen Pas Yisrael, the Kohen would eat it. So that should make them be able to join in a Zimun, like that Gemara in Brachos. So what's Pshat? So the Maaser Rokeach wants to say a big distinction. The Zimun is the act of eating together. And it really does depend only on the food you have right now. If I can eat the food that you have in front of you, I can join. If not, not. So why in Brachos do we say, well, if he would have brought him food, he would have eaten so they could join? That's only where one person comes so late that what prevents him from joining the Zimun is not that he has different food. It's the Zman. The Zman is Gorim, the lack of its darfus. So that's when we say, if he would still eat food, it's like you're still eating with him. And based on this, it makes sense that the Beis Yosef asks on the Agur, one of the Rishonim, who quotes, who say that the Kohanim and the Zar, a Kohen and a non-Kohen, eating together, one's eating Challah, one's eating Pas Akum, they can join, since they could bring Pas Yisrael to the non-Kohen. And the Beis Yosef asks on the Agur, and he says, not true. So the Maaser Rokeach says, B'mchilos Kvodo, he thinks that that chiluk is correct, that there's a chiluk between whether the Zman is goring the lack of its tarfus, or whether it's the food itself. But the Maaser Rokeach wants to say that it has to be that you have to be able to eat from the food that he has right now, and it doesn't matter whether they would bring him something later that you could eventually eat. You ruin the Hitzdarfus by not being able to eat what he has in front of him right now. That's a little bit about Rav Masud Chai Rokeach and his very well-known and important sefer on the Rambam, Maisa Rokeach.